Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. Good evening. Welcome to the Other Round. I'm Ruthanna Marcio, and we've got your Wednesday night ensemble. I believe we're short one person tonight. Raymond Blaine on Palestine won't be in. He was called out to help a friend tonight and doesn't think he'll get back in. So we're just going to do without him tonight. We're going to start right in with Monique Johnson from Healthy Movements International. Hi, Monique.
Hello, hello. It's so exciting to be here tonight. It is a honor and a privilege. Thank you, Ruthann, for inviting me. So today, our tea talk is going to be on the next two chakras. So chakras, of course, are the energy centers of the body, represented in the body, and it is the means by which a person who is of a spirit you've heard of, we are spiritual or energy beings having human experience. Well, how that energy gets into our physical world is by being expressed through the chakras. Last week, we talked a little bit about the heart chakra, and that's the energy center that is your fulcrum. It is your balancer. So if you are connected to your heart, at least, then you can... The only thing we start to look at is balancing the chakras, the earth-pertaining chakras, to the part of us that are our higher self chakras. So the heart chakra is the fourth chakra. It is the center one, and there are three below it and three above it. And the three below it deals with the earth self and expressing and being in this physical world. And the three above it goes with being that which is higher than earth self, and so going into ascension or enlightenment or awakeness, awareness, consciousness. There are so many words that we use kind of to describe the same experience. So once the fulcrum, the heart, has been connected up to you and you're well aware of that one, then the two that kind of play the seesaw between the earth self and the higher self, or the next one down, would be the third chakra, which is the solar plexus, your power center. And it is married to or on the same platform in a balancing act with our fifth chakra, which is our throat chakra, which deals with speaking and living and expressing your own personal truth. And so as you connect to the heart and connect to these two chakras, the way that we as humans experience experience health is by having balance. And each balance for each person is a little bit different. So it's not about trying to tell another person you're imbalanced or assessing another person. It's really about being in your own shoes and be able to self-discern where you yourself is, because balance looks different for everybody. So if we go a little bit deeper into the third energy center, our third chakra, which is the solar plexus, it deals with the stomach area above the navel. And you will notice that in the Asian arts, when you are trying to access your power, or even like in karate, taekwondo, and all these Asian arts like that that deals with defense and offense, you find your power from the depths of your belly or your gut. And that's why a lot of the wind, when you're doing the punch, is so all the power is looked at being represented in the belly or the gut. And so from this spot, in any power situation, we have the opportunity to empower ourselves, to create, to recreate, to let go of, to engage, whatever we're doing. We can empower ourselves, and or we can give our power away. And a lot of people look at giving your power away as a issue, But as long as it's done consciously, then it's just really being able to choose whichever one in the moment that your journey tells you to use. It's like a life tool utensil. So, of course, being able to empower oneself is very important as you create your life and create the experiences that you want to have in your life. And being able to give some of that power away to co-create an experience. I always like to reference this as when you go on the zip line. You know, if you're going to do a ride like a zip line through the forest where you're hanging on this little line, well, when you go to start that, there's a guy there that you kind of give part of your power away to so that he can strap you in good, you know. So you are kind of partnering with him, so you're giving him some of your power for that experience to be the experience you want it to be. If you kept all of your power and you didn't know how to strap yourself in, by the time you get on the middle of the zip line, okay, you're in the top of a tree. You're not attached to the zip line anymore. So it is very good to be able to co-create and to give a little of the power away. It's just very important that we are aware and awake when we use that tool. If we are aware and awake, then we can use that to enable us to progress through life, to let go of things, to partner with our partner in life, maybe our husband or wife, to create the home life or the experience of love in our house, our casa. And so all of these are the ways we use that energy center, the chakra. Of course, it can become imbalanced when you give out power, when you would be better served to empower the self or vice versa. So it's very good to really know what you're doing with your abilities, with your power. We go and we look up past the fulcrum up to the fifth chakra, which is the balancer of that power chakra. So you can see that if you empower yourself, and you use that energy, it flows right through the heart up to that next chakra, which is the center that deals with speaking and living your own truth. When you empower yourself and you stand in your own power fully as who you are, then we are able to speak our truth with confidence and to live our truth from day to day. So we begin to walk our own talk. And when we are able to do that, we keep ourselves connected and balanced between that energy as well, and we don't have to worry about the negative energy that builds up from deceit. Rather, that's self-denial. So we as humans have the ability to try to deceive ourselves even with the stories we tell ourselves. So it could be self-denial and self-deceit, not having integrity to the self to be exactly who we are in every moment without judgment. Or it also could be really trying to use manipulation and deceit on the external, with our external connections, because we don't feel we have the power to get or to do what we're trying to do without manipulation and deception. So you see how those two chakras really are very related, and how much we empower ourselves determines how much that fifth chakra is able to get energy and we can live in our own shoes fully. So as we walk through some more of these chakras each time that we come together on this show, then what we are doing is first just kind of assessing, learning the different characteristics of each chakra. And then we'll start to bring it out of the concept place and see exactly how it works in life on a day-to-day basis. And you can start to become aware as you live your life to be awake to see when your journey says, you're not living your truth there. And when you can wake up to that and embrace it as in, okay, aha, I see I'm not living my truth. I become aware. And then we marry that with the intelligence of how to become living your truth, how to fully stand in your shoes, and that's expanding your consciousness in both chakras. So that is our little conversation for today, to really just to open the awareness in these two areas. And as you go about your day this week until we talk again next week, become more aware of seeing, when am I saying one thing but doing something different in my day-to-day? When does that happen? And as you become more aware of it, just notate it either in your mind or your diary or your video. I do video diaries for myself. Just kind of notate it there. And right now we're just really trying to awaken the awareness, just trying to see clearly, because once we can see clearly, then we will be able to see, okay, does that need to be let go of, go into yin, or integrated, going into yang? And it's easier to deal with and start to dig through that once you just become aware with 100% acceptance of what is for yourself, with compassion, compassionate self-awareness. So it's not so that you can see so that you can start judging yourselves, because if we judge ourselves, we start to hide from ourselves. So it's just about open awareness, and not about judging, and we will build the love and the compassion that automatically comes from the heart. We will build that as we do this, because this that part is the fulcrum. That's the balancer. So that's it for today. Thank you so much. Yes, for sharing
Well, what you said about, you know, not judging, because we tend to hide from ourselves if we start to judge, that really just clicked. It's like, this is true, because we will self lies and hide. So being non-judgmental about our own actions is a very good point. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Yes. I love that part of it, because it really starts to help us to see that if we, and, you know, me working in the addiction center and all of that, and a lot of any addiction has to do with just covering over something that has not been addressed or hasn't been worked through. So we have all these different techniques that we use to keep ourselves in a place of self-denial. And if we can just embrace acceptance of what is and not judge it, then all of the shadows start to show up for us, and they really are able to be worked through pretty easily, as long as they are soaked in acceptance.
Well, once you actually see them clearly, I could see that. Well,
yes.
Good things to think on. Thank you for the tea talk, and we'll see you next week then. Yay.
Awesome. Very good. See y'all next week. So this has been Monique Johnson with Healthy Movements International, all spelled out, .com. Thank y'all so much. Much love.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Lots of good stuff. Yeah. So, actually, now we have Bob Maskey here. He writes for ReaderSupportedNews.com and has his own blog talk radio show called Left of Liberal. And I was just listening today to the interview you had with Nicholas James, where at the beginning you said you realized that left of liberal is LOL. And it's like, that was funny. okay, well, but sure, why not? We need to laugh out loud. I love your show. And
well, thank you.
You're doing it pretty much on a on a basis that is, well, the schedule is known only to you. Let's put it that way. So, and that's fine, because the archives are great, and most people listen to a lot of our shows much more in the archives than live, so it works. But tonight, being the good socialist that you are, or maybe you're more than that, you're going to talk to us about socialism and communism. Two of the words that were nasty words in the middle of the country where I grew up. And I'm in Illinois now, again, back in the state I grew up in, but not near the same place. But I like to say that this is the western part of the eastern part of the United States, because it's not really the middle. Yeah, I hate that Middle West term. It makes no sense. I'm looking at a map of the United States. It's like, no, I'm in the western part of the eastern. So, What did those words, when you were growing up, were those sort of four-letter words or not?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I grew up at a time, and it wasn't that long ago. I mean, if you had identified yourself as a communist, you would get your get the heck beat out of you. I mean, you know, in certain areas. I mean, you know, same thing with socialists. Probably not as bad because, you know, communism was associated primarily with the Soviet Union, which was, you know, our opponent during the Cold War. So calling yourself a communist wasn't just saying this is what I believe, this is how I think. It was saying I side with Russia over the United States.
Right.
So
it
brought
in
a lot. It brought in a lot of nationalism and stuff as opponents to you. Whether you sided with Russia and the Soviet Union or not, that's what the implication would have been to people who didn't quite know politics.
Right. But now how would you, if it's not asking too much, how would you, I hate to use the word pigeonhole, but how would you label yourself now?
I'm a socialist. Well, actually, I call myself a socialist with anarchist leanings, or, depending on my mood, an anarchist with socialist leanings.
Ah, okay.
And there is not a week that goes by that I don't get into an argument with somebody over the definitions of these terms.
Okay, so then, since you're good at defending your terms, your definitions, give us some definitions, because I think they're both very similar in ways. I mean, they're both systems of production, but socialism might lean more into the economic side, where I think communism encompasses more. Am I wrong?
Well, the problem with this, and something that the left doesn't seem to want to correct, because they do want to argue about it constantly, they don't want to define their terms. So basically whatever you think communism or socialism is acceptable to somebody. That's why, you know, the tea partiers can run around and call Obama a communist and a socialist, and other tea partiers don't call them on it. You know, within their little group, that's basically okay. That makes sense to them.
It makes me want to barf, but anyway.
But, you know, socialists and communists can do the same things to themselves. I mean, I get into arguments over these semantics all the time. And, you know, nine times out of ten, after names have been called and, you know, people have jumped in usually against me, at the end of the whole thing, everybody admits that I'm right. That, you know, once we've talked about it, once I get to explain exactly what I'm talking about, once I get to say this is why I use this term for this reason, they don't admit they were wrong, but they, oh, okay, you know. Then you get your likes. But it's really imperative that we start coming to some kind of a realization of what these terms mean. I mean, the one I want to start with is communism.
Okay.
And where I go back to this, and I try to give the provenance, the history, where I'm coming up with my definition, or you know, who gives me this definition and why I think this is an important part of the definition, whether it's still true or was only true a while back. But Karl Marx's definition of communism, I think, is the most important to start with. And Marx's definition of communism was basically an economic system, a society where the means of production, the factories, the things that created products and all, the land, were under the control of the working class, that there were no more rich in the corporations. We were not run by greed. We were now run by need. We were producing for need. We were producing the food, the clothing, the homes that people needed to live and eat and wear. That was communism. That was a complete change from capitalism, which is based on greed, which is based on the wealth of a few, to a very just system. I don't want to go so far as to say utopia, but, you know, some people would call that close to a utopic kind of a way. Now, very simply, when you understand, and I, you know, I'm pretty sure on this, you know, somebody maybe will come out and say I'm incorrect on it, and I do try to give myself a lot of outs, if you notice, but once we understand that we live in capitalism and that Marx's definition of communism was either what I said or somewhat close to what I said, there's a transition stage. is a transition stage between capitalism and communism. That is socialism. That the transition between capitalism to communism is socialism. The problem, obviously, is that all of these words have been turned into derogatory words by the right wing. You know, you don't call somebody a communist because they believe in utopia. You don't call them a communist because they believe in working people should own the means of production. You call them a communist because you don't like them. So the word itself has been corrupted quite a bit, and we have to take that into account when we're talking to people. We have to communicate with, if you want to communicate with working people, the people you supposedly represent and advocate for, you have to be able to talk in terms that they can accept. And if you begin a conversation often with identifying yourself, for example, as a communist, that's going to shut the conversation right up. You're not going to have a chance to say, well, this is what, you know, Karl Marx said communist was. So what communist now means is basically what we had in the Soviet Union. That's pretty much what everybody accepts as communist.
Which wasn't.
Which, well, absolutely not. I mean, you know, if you, I don't believe that. I mean, there are people who believe that. But if you take it as the means of production were under the control and being used for the working class, I think it falls short, far short of that.
Right.
So, yeah, yes, you're right. I think there was a definite lack. I think communism by Marx was economic democracy, and I think that was lacking in the Soviet Union. I never went to the Soviet Union. I'm not real studied up on the Soviet Union, but I'm pretty sure it's not my definition of socialism or communism. So when we're talking about communism, we have to take this into account, that people have a very skewed idea of what Marx's idea of communism was. Same thing with socialism, though not as bad.
Well, now socialism, like you said, it's that transition.
Uh-huh.
But so why would people say they're socialist but not say they're communist? Do they where the socialism would be? And I'm not saying that's wrong.
Well, I think I got what you're getting at. I'm sorry, Ruthann. I think I get where you're getting at, the question you're asking, and maybe, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. But there's also this big split within the left, within the far left, of the concept of a vanguard party. A vanguard party as kind of represented what they had in Russia. A lot of these people identify themselves as Marxist-Leninists. Marxist after Marx, Leninist after Lenin, who led the Bolsheviks during the Russian Revolution in 1917. The Bolsheviks were a vanguard party, basically. They were not necessarily a part. They may well have been working class, but they were not the entire working class. They were a group of people who were leading the working class. And in my understanding, that's today called a vanguard party. You know, as opposed to what I believe, and what anarchists believe, what I think a lot of socialists believe, especially now as we've looked back at how the vanguard party system has failed in a lot of places, we are against that. We believe that the working class has to come along almost as a whole. I mean, sure, there are people who are more intelligent. Sure, there's more people who are more studied. Sure, there are people who are more committed, and there are perhaps leadership, some form of leadership developing out of that. But to go too far ahead of the working class could lead to very bad things happening with your economy. Could lead to a huge, massive government. Could lead to a huge, massive government that infringes on every part of you, that does not have any real resemblance to what socialism and communism should be. Did that make sense, Ruthann?
Sort of. Yes. Does. So you but still, so is that why socialists don't want to say they're communists, or they really don't believe that they are? They don't believe that we would ever get to the communist state.
I think we're all communists except for we don't believe in the Vanguard Party, and
right.
most people think of communism as people who believe in the Vanguard
as
Party.
Vanguard, right.
So, yeah, so we're kind of like, well, if I identify myself with, as a communist, then people are going to think that I believe in this and I don't, so I'm going to just confuse everybody and call myself a socialist.
Okay. No, that makes sense. And I understand what you're saying as far as you can't get well, you need everybody involved, not just a certain party or class, even though they were the Vanguard Party, they were working people, but they may have had a little more going for them to get certain places.
We can't skip history, too. I mean, the history of what happened in the Soviet Union after the 1917 revolution is a horrible history. Most Americans do not understand that the United States invaded Russia. The
yeah.
United States, along with the European powers, they invaded Russia. We had troops in Russia, and they were supporting the other side in the Civil War. What happens when something like that happens? Well, a small group of people gain power, and they tell everybody else, we have to defend here, and this is where you have to go, and this is how you have to do it, and you have to carry this kind of gun. It's a matter of survival. It's not a matter of just survival of your revolution. It's a matter of individual survival, because if these foreign troops ever get a hold of you,
yeah.
you're in trouble. So there are reasons why the Vanguard Party formed and basically ran Russia. There were very good reasons, and historically, I don't know if it could have happened any other way. But I don't want to see that happen over and over again everywhere, especially since I think it was pretty obvious that once the Vanguard Party got into power, it would be very difficult to change that dynamic. Anybody who says it's impossible, well, the Soviet Union did collapse. It did collapse. It was possible to challenge that Vanguard Party, to get the Vanguard Party out of power. It was absolutely possible, but it's difficult. And I mean, I'm socialism, communism, should be for broader democracy, not narrower democracy.
Say that again.
Socialism, communism, the left should be for more democracy, not less democracy. Democracy involving more people, not democracy among a few group, select group of people.
Right. It should be widening out, encompassing,
right.
instead of closed in, exclusive elite. We have elite running our country now, and look what a mess they've made.
Right. So, and the reasoning goes, there's a person to listen to, Richard Wolff. I don't know if you've ever heard him or not, but he is on YouTube. I believe he's spelled W-O-O-L-F or W-O-L-F-F. I get it confused, but he's a Marxist professor.
Right, right. There's a double something in there, right?
Right. But he's a Marxist professor, brilliant guy, an excellent speaker. And some of the things he says are, when you have the working people in control of, say, a local factory, they're not going to lay everybody off. They're not going to move the factory to another country where wages are lower. They're not going to pollute their local environment.
Right.
Right? I mean, this makes complete sense to me. It should be under the control of the local people, of the people who work, the people who make everything. They should have control over it. And I think we have to trust them to make the right decisions. Don't pollute. don't you know, cause poverty. You know, build up your community. Your children are going to have to live in that neighborhood. Protect it, which is what we do not see under capitalism.
Not a bit, because like you said, I mean, it's all about greed. It has nothing to do with need, except
right.
the need for the wealthy to get wealthier. It's their yep. need, I suppose.
And it's also very short-term. You know, capitalism looks for that short-term profit.
Yeah.
It doesn't even think about profit in 10 or 15 years, you know, whereas a socialist society, a socialist economy, should be able to think forward to the next generation.
Right, and not think that their very foundations are going to be shook every time somebody new comes into power kind of thing.
Right.
Which, well, we have to an extent. I read something, and this would be talking about possibly like communism being an umbrella group, but it was sort of backwards. It said that communism is a form of socialism, as Catholicism is a form of Christianity. It was making the socialism the umbrella instead of the communism the umbrella.
Yeah, I've actually had somebody tell me that socialists were just a branch of liberalism.
Oh, wow.
Which, yeah. So again, you know, it goes back to my original statement. These terms are thrown about by people who have no idea what they mean, and not only that, but they'll defend what they don't know to the point of yelling and screaming and calling names and everything else.
Yeah, because, well, right. I mean, if I can out loud you, well, then that means I'm right, no matter what
right.
kind of bullshit I'm talking, if I can just raise my voice over yours. So I also saw where, a lot of people think that the former Soviet Union, yes, that was the definition of communism, or China today. And it seems like these are basically more fascist police states than communism to me.
Well, another thing in going back to the source that I know, Karl Marx. I mean, Karl Marx never suggested that a country like China could become communist. Karl Marx, he was brilliant, by the way. He's not, he's kind of ridiculed in this country, but he was more of a mathematician than a philosopher. He had a reason and logic behind everything he wrote. When you read something like the Communist Manifesto, it's a little more propagandish than a lot of the other stuff. But if you read, the Das Kapital or a lot of his other things, it's really, really concrete. And his what he was saying was, socialism, communism is a progression. It's like walking upstairs. The human race began like this, and we had royalty, and the royalty ran the economy, and then we had capitalism, which was an improvement over royalty, and then we had now capitalism, all this industry, all these people creating things. They've created enough wealth that we can feed everybody. We've created enough wealth. We can have a home for everybody. Now we're ready for communism. Now we're ready for that step towards socialism, communism, the next stage of human economic development. China was an agrarian system. They were farmers. They were not. They had very little industry. Tradesmen probably more than anything. Russia wasn't much different. There was a very small piece of Russia that is part of Europe, and there were factories, there were big cities, but most of Russia, 100 million people, lived in poverty, in agrarian poverty. According to Marx, these people were not ready to revolt. These people were not ready to move into a communist state. So a lot of people would excuse what's happened in China, saying that it never could have happened anyway. They're doing the best they could, baby, is what people might say. As far as are they a dictatorship? Were they a tyranny? I don't know. When we live in this country and we've seen what's happened over the last 10 years, I'm not going to say they're any worse than we are. And I get a lot of grief. I get a lot of grief from Democrats, for example, when I say something like that. But I stand with that. This country is not democratic. This country is a sham of democracy, and the fact that anybody still defends going into that, I still vote, sure, but anybody defends that as actually doing anything or fooling themselves into thinking that that actually accomplishes anything, and the big picture is fooling themselves. So we live under a dictatorship as well.
Well, I agree. The only reason I can see for voting is sort of like getting out in the street and protesting. I mean, you're making your voice heard, but we know that when it gets to higher up offices, they've already been selected anyway.
Yep.
Your vote really doesn't count there. So it's going to be twisted and turned however. And it's just appalling the money that is spent on those elections. I mean, billions of dollars that could go towards something else. So I agree with you. I mean, yeah, go ahead and vote, but don't use it as a protest or something, which means go ahead, vote third party, please.
Right.
because that's the only way it's going to, you know, get through to them that you're discontented. Because, I mean, they don't want you to vote, for heaven's sake. They don't want to know. They want you sitting in front of the TV watching, I don't know what, awards or some kind of sports things. You know, I don't have TVs anymore, and so I'm not really up on what's going on, except I see enough of the mainstream media online to know that it sucks pretty much. So, but that's what they want. They want you to just fall for all of that. And unfortunately, a lot of people still are.
Yeah, I like the point you're making. I mean, they don't want you to vote, but then when you do vote, you're only supposed to have a choice between these two very similar...
The Uniparty candidates, yeah. You know. So, I mean,
so they've got you both ways, you know. If you boycott the system, they've got you, because then you don't even participating in it. And if you vote, your candidate will never win, right? I mean, and then when something like Ralph Nader comes along and back in 2000, then you're blamed for 8 years of war, right?
Right, right. So just your ordinary working class person, it does seem like you're just up against the wall. But, you know, we're trying to get people out of that mind frame, because people can make a difference, and
It's
been done before, and there's all kinds of ways to rebel or revolt. So I really would suggest that people look for, well, first place, you can be found on Facebook, Bob, M-A-S-C-H-I, and your show on Blog Talk is Left of Liberal.
Yep.
And then also readersupportednews.com will find you. So people can get more of your views and some laughs, because you're funny. And
yeah, I haven't proved that today, though, huh?
No, I mean, really. And you write, you know, you throw something in there. It's like, oh, that's funny. So I always smile when I listen to read what you write.
Well, thank you, Ruthann.
So I thank you so much for coming on, Bob.
Thanks for inviting me. It was fun.
Great. Okay. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Well, and now we're back with Sarit Jacobson. Hi, Sarit.
Hi. How are you doing?
I am good. It got up to 90 degrees in Illinois, so summer has come back, and that's good. I didn't want autumn to get here too soon, so it's all okay. I suppose.
Yeah, it's come back here for a day too.
Yeah, yeah. It was supposed to be warm this holiday weekend, and because, you know, this is our last. What did they consider Labor Day, like the last of the summer holidays? The weekend, you know, it's the big thing. And
I don't even feel like we had a summer. It was so cold.
I know. That's
so strange. I feel like I'm still waiting for summer. My body still thinks it's spring. My dogs were shedding all summer because they were. It confuses everything. Even my dogs are confused.
Yeah. Well, my cats are confused, and that's probably just one of the many reasons. As they give me those looks. But, yeah, it feels funny. But, you know, I mean, this weather may last for quite a while. So we'll just take what we get. But
Do people know why this is happening? Because I do.
Well, sure. Climate distortion, what people have done to the weather. I mean, look at HAARP and et cetera.
Told our ice is melting. I was watching a show about the pole, and it showed how fast things are melting. It's way beyond any expectations.
Right. And it comes back to people's greed, their consumerism. You know, we don't need all of
capitalism.
These things. But
capitalism is a big problem.
Yeah. No, capitalism, I mean, yeah. And just consume. The United States has about 5% of the world's population. And we're using up about between 35 and 40% of the world's natural resources, which,
that's,
you know,
crazy.
It's all interconnected, because to do that, we keep going into other countries and stealing them and waging war on them. So,
yeah.
it's, you know, people have got to come to some kind of a moral, spiritual settlement within their own minds. Once they do that, they can spread it out, and you know, we can turn this around. But coming back to just this week, I read that 8 people were arrested in Jerusalem or near Jerusalem. They were Palestinian, of course, and 5 of them were children. This was what I saw today, and it's like, my God, do these Zionists never take a break? You know, they just keep on. They don't do breaks.
I can explain a lot about it. I have been spending yesterday going through testimonies of Israeli soldiers all in Hebrew, and I can tell you a little bit of what happens there. The soldiers talk about their behavior there and the arrests. And what happens is, once you are in the territories as a soldier, they really drill to your mind that they are the enemy. But something happens to you. You lose your humanity. Once you do one bad thing, the second bad thing is easier.
Yeah, okay.
This soldier was talking about a fact that there was always detainees in his base. And the Palestinian detainees have their eyes tied, and they're sitting in the base waiting to be taken somewhere. Now, you're not going to believe this. I have to be strong to even say it. Okay, so there's random Palestinian detainees sitting in their base while they're having their coffee, getting ready to go places, and they put their cigarettes out on them.
Oh.
And I'm talking about regular people, regular soldiers. Use them as ashtrays. Isn't that horrendous? That's just their daily life. They haven't even done anything. They just like to harass them for no reason. It's from Breaking the Silence testimony. You can find it on YouTube. They have their own YouTube channel under the name Shovrim, Shovrim. Another thing after that, you can imagine that anything goes.
Sure, yes. Well, I mean, and if people think, oh, well, they put the cigarettes out, just think what happens when you burn yourself on the stove.
I can't stand being burned.
I know. I mean, or you put your hand in the oven and your oven mitt doesn't cover whatever, and you just get a burn on your finger.
Oh, yeah, it happens often.
Yeah. And, I mean, how painful that is. And can you imagine somebody grinding a cigarette out on you who has a
gun? I would scream. And they can't scream. They don't feel comfortable enough to scream, I'm sure.
No.
It creates...
worse would happen.
Real terror.
Yeah.
Terror.
I don't know how people get past that. I really don't. I think these are some of the strongest people in the world to get past. But now you were reading this from Breaking the Silence, and how are these Israeli ex-soldiers feeling about this now? That they're
crying.
Writing?
It's live testimonies. I'm sharing them on Daily Life in Palestine page. I'll share one right now for anyone who wants to see. I'm sharing them all the time on my wall, Sarit Jacobson, and Daily Life in Palestine. I'm sharing them often. And now there's another Israeli girl administrator on Daily Life. So she's also full of spelling mistakes, but writes the most beautiful things. Here it is. 17, 18 hours ago, I shared these things. Also, another guy, for example, he arrived in the checkpoint and decided that he's going to be a good guy. He's going to be a good soldier. You know, some of them still believe they can be good soldiers.
Oh.
And he didn't understand why the Palestinians in the checkpoint would never laugh at his jokes.
Oh.
They would laugh at all his jokes the same. Sorry. They would laugh at all his jokes the same, even the bad ones, till one day he realized that they are just afraid and laughing politely because he saw them laugh at a real joke somewhere. And he said he was so offended that he hit them, and then he realized why he never...
Oh, my God. that they were so afraid that they felt they had to politely laugh at whatever he said, bad joke. That gets just right to the heart of the person. This is, I don't know how they do it. I couldn't do it. Go ahead.
I couldn't do it. I would rather go to jail or get killed.
Well,
I was ready to kill myself if they made me do it. I remember I was only 18, and I'm not suicidal. But they gave me a gun, and I thought, okay, if they make me do something, I can always shoot myself first. And I didn't think I was a good person. I thought I was average. I know people who I think are better than me. So strange.
Well,
the suicide rate is insanely high there.
I can understand why. And you know, one of the things that's not talked about in the U.S. that much is our suicide rate, too.
More die from suicide than from what they call terrorists.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of the, when over in other countries, a lot of what is purported to be killings by quote unquote the enemy are actually our people committing suicide because they can't stand it anymore. They can't stand what they have become. And
absolutely. Have anyone who has lived under the same roof with a war veteran knows they never get a night without screaming.
And it takes over the life. And you say, well, it's just a night time.
I was in the same house. I used to be woken up every night for years, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I know what war does to people. It makes the survivors suffer more than those who die.
Yeah.
I have many friends who are war vets, mostly from Israel, but some from here. I've met some from here, and they are all suffering very much.
Yeah.
They don't know who to turn to. They're ashamed of their suffering. They know they were wrong, but they're suffering.
Yeah,
so that's why there's such a big silence about war here, because people are ashamed to come out of the closet and say, I killed so many people, I raped a few, I lost it, I'm sorry. They're afraid.
Yeah, because they know how horrendous it was, and they just, it goes back to the Vietnam veterans that came back to this country. I mean, we still have
I know many of those.
And they
Vietnam veterans well. They told me about the rapes that happened.
Right. I mean, they're a hot mess. Let's face it. Because they just can't get over the things they did. They were told to do.
No, they will never get over it.
No, they won't.
All of them.
And what they do, I mean, some of them have turned into, I mean, not that they weren't wonderful people before and since, but I mean, they're really good people doing good things, but they still have the nightmares because they won't. It's not something you forget.
One time I asked a Vietnam veteran, because he was waking up screaming, what did you dream about? Tell me. No, I can't tell you. Please,
yeah.
I want to know. No, it's too terrible. I don't want you to know. It's that terrible that imagine that you can't even tell your friends.
Right, you can't tell your friends, you can't tell your family because you're so assured that if you tell them, they're not going to love you anymore. That they're going to
absolutely
evil person, and we have to be able to do something to change that so they don't feel that they know that we just hate the government even more for putting them in that position, but we don't hate them. I mean, they were
absolutely agree with you. It's not. I don't even blame them. I blame whoever sent them.
Yeah, because basically they were like 17, 18, 19 years old.
Totally child abuse.
That, you know what it is? War is child abuse because it's always those youngsters that are sent. And
absolutely.
They don't know who they are at that age. I mean, it's just, you know, like you were 18. And there were
I didn't know who I was.
Well, no. But you did know that you weren't going to, you know, play their game.
I didn't know why.
But,
yeah, I just got feelings.
Yeah.
You know what the problem was? Right before I was forced to join IDF, my literature teacher made me read 1984.
Ah.
It really did something to me. I thought I was in 1984 in basic training. I kept telling the people there. Yeah, it was crazy.
Wow. So did you...
What a timing to read 1984. Art is... I learned how important art is, and writing and painting and movie. That's the only way we can really affect the young generation, because they don't like to read or listen.
Yeah. No, that's true. And that's something that you
read
do.
Read the book, but instead I watched the movie. I was a bad kid.
But you're a musician.
Yeah.
And you also paint. So, I mean, you're definitely doing yours. And you make jewelry. So you're doing...
yeah, that's easy.
Things. Yeah. But you're doing the
easy
things. Well, that comes easy to you.
Oh, yeah.
It's
way too
your,
easy.
Yeah.
Natural.
It's true that the culture... Well, because remember when countries are invaded and whatever, like they did with Khmer Rouge in Cambodia, you know, first to go, they took their doctors, their academians, their artists. That's
yeah.
All ones, just like the Germans in the Second World War. Those were the people that they imprisoned first, because they know that the cultural people, the artists and the intellectuals, are the ones who can stir people, who can fight back, who can get people seeing what's
Absolutely.
Really happening. And so they don't want that.
And that's why the corporations bought the music business.
Mm-hmm.
I believe. Sure, that we
yeah.
only have Lady Gaga and Miley Cyrus, and no more Jim Morrison's or Janis Joplin's allowed, or definitely no more John Lennon's.
Well,
and, you
sure.
know, I play music all around the USA. I played in clubs. There are amazing musicians here that could have been
yes.
discovered if somebody cared.
Yes. No, I agree. And
I had the honor to meet so many. And then I had the honor to meet people high up in the music business who affirmed that I am correct.
Mm-hmm. See? Well, that's why everything's going to the indie stuff. I mean, people are independently producing their own work. They are trying to get these big companies, because so much has been written and said about the handlers for, like you mentioned, Lady Gaga, Miley Cyrus, and MK Ultra, the Monarch, all of those things, where these people are really being handled by people we don't want to know about, but we must know. But I mean, it's a whole other world. So I say that, you know, the more you can keep away from these big music companies or big movie companies, the better.
I agree.
You know, do your own thing, and it will get out there. I mean, you have to work maybe harder to get it out there, but you don't have to sell your soul either. And that counts for a lot.
Absolutely. I would rather sell a few pieces of jewelry than have to sell my soul.
Yeah, exactly.
There's always a way. It may be difficult, but it's very difficult to come back when you sell your soul.
Uh-huh.
I don't envy any of the big stars for having all their fame.
Yeah, I mean, ask them. What they've seen and done.
I've spoken to one who was not really glad to have fame at all, actually. They said it was just a job-wise, everyone coming to me for talking to me. It was just a job, people. Oh, they just love me for my fame. Those are things I heard a lot.
Yeah, well... That's it. I mean, they're isolated from.
It's very isolating.
And
anyway, Israel uses white phosphorus, which is a chemical weapon, and during 2008 war over Gaza, and also used it on the last one, the cloud one.
Yes.
And now America's going to pick on somebody in Syria who they think, they assume, is maybe using chemical weapon because of a YouTube video, which I do not know nothing about much, but it's all strange.
Well, all I figured is that there was some kind of chemical stuff that the rebels used, and we know where the rebels are getting stuff. They're getting it from the West and from Saudi Arabia. And so, I mean, there's no reason to think that the chemicals didn't come right from the U.S., like the white phosphorus.
Yeah, anything. I wouldn't. Business needs to make money.
Well,
I wish America intervened when Israel was using white phosphorus in Gaza nonviolently. What America could have done is stop using their veto power over Israel in the UN, and when the UN accuses Israel of a war crime, not to veto it.
Exactly, because there's been how many resolutions against, like 60-some? I think I used that figure.
I lost count.
There's 90-some, but anyway, I mean, a huge number of resolutions against Israel, but the United States has kept anything from ever coming to fruition. Because they keep standing up for Israel, even though Israel breaks all the international laws. So that's ridiculous. And, you know, we still see the tear gas and everything that's shot in Palestine.
Oh, yes.
Can't say made in the U.S. So.
And the gas has killed people.
Yeah, yes.
Babies and a pregnant woman once, and who knows how many really, because a death in Palestine does not always get to us here in the West. They can say the person. For example, a woman died of tear gas in her home. There was a protest outside her home. And you know what they said in the Israeli papers? That she died from cancer.
See?
Just lie.
Right. And let's face it. If she wouldn't have died from it right then, she would have died from cancer. This stuff is toxic. I mean,
absolutely, and it creates abortion, natural abortion. It can make a woman lose her baby for real.
Where babies are still being born deformed because of the stuff the United States used there. I mean, Iraq, not Iran. In Iraq.
So in Fallujah, yeah.
Yeah.
They have a hospital full.
Yeah.
I saw a camera go in the hospital there, and it was going through whole rooms. I just couldn't believe it. I don't like to watch things that put nightmares in my soul, but I had to go and watch it. I can't believe it. I even met a guy from that served in Fallujah and asked him if it's true.
Yeah. No, we have to watch these things because we have to know what's happening. And I mean, that doesn't mean that we don't cry and scream and rant and rage, but these people who, whether it's animal abuse or people abuse, and people say, oh, I don't want to see that. I just want to slap them because they want to just live off here in this world and not know about what's going on. And they keep buying products. They keep doing all these things that perpetuates this.
Yeah,
so
that perpetuates
it. See. Yeah.
Sarit,
what kind of contact info can you give us for yourself?
Content what?
Contact info like Jacobson, Facebook. You have a Facebook page. And you said Daily Life in Palestine is your Facebook.
Daily Life in Palestine is a great page because I post everything I find out on it.
Yeah, so that's where people can look you up. And
American Alarm Clock is a blog that Michael writes, which is my partner, and it's a really amazing blog. And
right.
It is also a page. And did you know what else is new in Palestine? Israeli soldiers were patrolling in Hebron, And with their patrol gear or their guns and everything, they walked into a wedding and started dancing.
Oh, God.
So okay, the people look very inviting and just dance with them.
Oh, yeah, Jesus. We wanted a wedding.
Oh. Yeah. That's funny. You're absolutely. And you know what else is wrong about that? Everything about it is just wrong. They're not supposed to go full gear and create such provocation. I mean, who knows what it can lead to.
Right. Okay. Okay. Think, you know, people, you've just had a wedding that you've had some little quirk, somebody got too drunk or somebody fell down. Just think, you could have had the Zio soldiers dancing at your wedding. So be glad you had what you had. Sari, we're going to, our time's up. We will
okay.
be back on next Wednesday.
Great. Okay. So talk to you then.
Okay. And Blaine will be here next Wednesday too. He had to come tonight and couldn't come on. So
okay.
Thank you very much. And
thank
we'll
you.
These different pages also on our Air Marte Field page. So good night, my friend, and have a wonderful holiday.
Night. Bye-bye.